I'm Crabcat XO and Bioware Community Manager Jessica Marison, and I was forced to say that I was on the Nerd Appropriate podcast.
Welcome to Rated A, episode number 90 for the website nerdappropriate.com. We have a very special episode today. We've got an interview with Jessica Marizan, the community manager for BioWare and also of Crabcat fame. So I've been out for a week. My internet didn't let me on last time, but I am here. How are you guys doing?
Awesome, man. We were
doing great. Really,
we were bummed that you didn't make it last week, but we had Mylin on and she did a great job, so...
Yes.
She was a great replacement.
She is awesome. I'm excited
the 11th hour.
To meet her at PAX East this year. That'll be fun.
I know.
She wasn't as bitter.
No one is.
we didn't miss that.
Yeah, well, yeah. No one quite brings the anger and bitterness like me.
Let's do the rundown.
So this week on the podcast, we're just going to do... some news, and then we're going to go to our discussion with Jessica Marizan. And in our Nerd Appropriate question of the week, in honor of community, and actually today is Community Appreciation Day, Community Manager Appreciation Day, which is awesome.
Yes.
Yay! Yeah.
So our question of the week is, what community event or promotion would you love to see from your favorite studio slash publisher?
Publisher.
See, awesome. What you don't know is that I can hear myself talking in my headset, and sometimes, right. Yeah, it makes everything weird.
Right.
It is weird.
Yeah, I do my best.
So this is we actually just got off with Jessica. We just got off of Skype with Jessica, and yeah, I think you guys are really going to enjoy this chat a little bit later in the podcast.
I'm actually looking forward to hearing it because I do not know what it's going to be about.
Yeah, yeah. It is like a crazy. I loved it. It was just like a random, like, put a bunch of questions in a box and shake it up and see what happens.
And it happened.
It's almost it's like putting a bunch of keys in a bowl and just picking some out. And
yeah.
Needless to say, you definitely have to stick around and listen because it is a fun one. So,
anyways.
So what have you guys been doing?
I have had the flu for a week. My week did not get better after the internet crashing out. I went to work on Tuesday. Well, it got a little better on Monday. I had a friend in town, which was Scott and I's drummer from our band, Patrick. And he and I and another musician friend of ours up here went in and wrote and recorded a couple songs. It was kind of awesome.
I can't wait to hear them.
I have not done it in 3 years, so to
were
go
you
and
the vocalist this time.
No, Oscar sang. I'll probably sing some, but Oscar did the singing. They're like, it's kind of amazing because Oscar and Patrick are pretty much two of the best musicians that I know, period. And to be able to sit and play with the two of them was awesome. So it was really
fun.
That's
great.
And did you sing Peanut Butter and Jelly Get in My Belly?
No, it was, although I probably could, if you really want me to get that song down on tape, as they would say, I'll do that for you. But yeah, and then I woke up on Tuesday and I went to work and I wasn't feeling really great. And then by the end of the day, everybody was telling me I looked green and that I should just go home. They kept telling me over and over that I was at work. So I went home at around 4 o'clock and pretty much passed out almost immediately. And then I woke up like I was in hell on Wednesday, and then Thursday was no better. And then Friday got a little better, and then Saturday was better than that. And then Sunday, you know, I'm on the way up now. So.
Hey.
Jeez,
we played Halo last night.
We played some Halo, which was fun.
Wow.
Did you play the new Spartan Ops?
No. No, we're on like episode 4, I think.
Yeah, we're on 5 now. Yeah.
Surprisingly good.
It's so
nobody
great.
Invited me.
Were you online?
You weren't online.
I'll invite you.
Next time I'll just text you. I'll just say, hey.
Yeah. Okay, girl. Text me.
We'll girl. Do that.
Hey girl. You don't play some Halo.
I also, not to keep mine going forever, but I also played Ghostbusters. I fired that game
so
up on
good,
Xbox.
Dude.
It is really good. I put it in because I needed something to follow Walking Dead that felt like the opposite of Walking Dead. And this absolutely does. It's written really well and it's funny. And you really feel like you're part of the movie. And you're like, oh, this is awesome.
I think Dan Aykroyd wrote the game.
Yeah, Dan Aykroyd.
Oh, really?
It is a really great game.
Yeah, Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis wrote it.
It's great.
And directed it.
It's the closest thing you're ever going to get to Ghostbusters 4. Three. Three?
Yeah. Maybe not ever, man.
Yeah.
Maybe not ever. Three. But maybe not ever. How about you, Ash?
Well, this is strange. This is so out of order. I wasn't expecting it. let's see. Well, I've been kind of busy. I went to Universal last weekend, and I went to, you know, the Wizarding World and rode around in some flying brooms and crap, and that was fun. Got The Witcher for my birthday like 6 months ago and finally like opened the plastic and started playing it. Mm-hmm. And then like the weekend before last, I literally played for 16 hours in one sitting.
Wow.
So that should tell you, I got bed sores and like sweaty bottoms and all that fun stuff.
Wait a minute. What path did you take?
I went the Vernon Roach path. Hold on.
Oh, I don't want to.
I know. Before you yell, I only did it because all of my boy bros were like, you got to go the Vernon Roach path because he is a badass. And I was like, well,
not as badass as Yorvith.
See, well, that's the thing. I'm just going to play it twice. But anyway, I really enjoyed Witcher 2. I felt like the story was incredibly well thought out and very adult. And I liked the gameplay. I didn't love it. I liked the character of the Witcher. I felt like the universe was incredibly well realized. Mm-hmm. There were some things, obviously, a lot of people have issues with some of the sexism in the game. But, you know, if you just overlook that sexism, if you overlook, you know, objectifying women and treating them like hookers all the time.
Boobs.
My wife literally, she was sitting there reading Game of Thrones as I was playing Witcher. So we were having like nerdy fantasy day. And she kept looking up like as I was like having sex with fake cyber ladies, and she goes, just once I want a game where you play as a girl and you go to all these man sex camps.
I agree.
It's literally in the second act, there's a tent city outside of mm-hmm. the castle that's just a sex tent, and it's like you go in the sex tent and you're like, which one do I want?
It's the oldest profession.
It's true. But anyway, Witcher 2 was a lot of fun. And I also beat the new Borderlands DLC. I beat it with 4 players, and that was a lot of fun as well. So,
man, I would be totally mad if it weren't for the fact that you were playing with your wife and your friend's wife.
Yeah, we do the four. We have our 4-player co-op campaign that we only play when we play together.
So it's like I understand why you played that, even though I texted you multiple times to play it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I get it. I understand.
I tried to play it solo too, but it was too hard.
That's what I heard. That's what I heard.
Wussed out. So, Scotty, what have you been doing?
Like we talked about, I played some Halo 4 with Matt and our friend Bill, and that was a ton of fun. And on Saturday night, I saw Mike Birbiglia.
That's awesome.
I saw Mike Birbiglia, and it was incredible. It was really awesome. Good.
He's a funny man. Did he do stand-up, or was it his one-man show thing?
No, he's kind of doing like these one-man shows now. So instead of like doing like jokes, he kind of like tells a very long story with comedy and like some heavy parts and stuff like that. But it's really good. I really enjoyed it.
I'm really bummed because I told you when you told me you went, he plays like at the bar that's right next to our house. He plays there, or he was playing there weekly. And it was called Mike Birbiglia Working It Out because he was trying to like work up. He was doing the material that he was going to take on the road. Mm-hmm. And it would sell out, I mean, literally in minutes because it's a tiny club. So like it'd be like Mike Birbiglia and I'd be like, tickets. And it was like sold out like every time just immediately. So I never got to see it, but I'm so happy you got to see it because it's awesome.
It was so cool. And he's the nicest dude. And like, of course, which is I think is becoming like the norm is like to, you know, tell people to turn off your cell phones and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He came out and he opened the show by reading the tweets that people were sending at him because he started late, you know,
mm-hmm.
and people were getting pissed and he was like reading the tweets and it was really fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really good. So that was the highlight of my week. How about you, Hillary?
Let's see. So I finished Skyrim Dragonborn DLC, which is pretty fun. And I know that I'm supposed to do a write-up about it and I will do that. So look forward to that, everyone. But yeah, it's really, really cool. I mean, it's so expansive. I mean, you go to a new place, you get new music. There's all kinds of really cool missions, and you learn a lot more about the lore of the Morrowind timeline. So yeah, it was really, really cool. And then I also started Far Cry 3, which is pretty cool.
Did you?
Yeah, I know. Awesome. I like it. It's different.
You got to get in the co-op with us. It's a good time.
Yeah. No, it's funny because it's one of those games where you go, you know, you have to kill something to make something, and then you're like, hooray, I just killed a pig to have a weapon holster thingy. And then you pick up the bigger gun and you're like, oh man, I'm better at a pistol. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good game, though.
You'll like it. Keep going with it. It just gets better and better.
It's a little bit weird, but I like it. Speaking of weird and strange things, so in the news,
news.
Yeah. There's actually something about Doctor Strange.
Yeah, great segue. Yeah,
that was really good.
Sometimes, man, sometimes.
Yeah.
News.
Yeah, so Marvel is starting, I guess, next year. They're going to start on what they're calling Phase 3. And for those of you who don't really get what the phases are, Phase 1 was like, you know, Iron Man, Thor,
Captain America,
and then Avengers. Yeah, and then Phase 2 is going to be Avengers 2, Iron Man 3, Thor 2, Captain America 2,
Guardians of the
Galaxy, absolutely. And then Phase 3, which I guess they're going to start shooting, you know, 2014 for release in like 2016, are films like Ant-Man, directed by Scott Pilgrim director Edgar Wright.
Yep.
And the newly announced Doctor Strange film, which I'm pretty fucking excited about.
I think it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be awesome.
I'm pretty excited. Like, if they do it right and they make it like a sword and sorcery film set in the Marvel Universe, I think it could be really, really incredible. And that's, of course, and then Avengers 2 is also in what they consider Phase 3. So it'll be Ant-Man, Doctor Strange, rumors of a Black Panther movie. Don't really.
So the one funny thing about Avengers 2 that came out about this is they are hinting at the number 7. So everybody's thinking there's going to be another Avenger added to the cast before Avengers 2.
It's interesting because, I mean, technically, I think Avengers 2 might come out before Ant-Man or else they would just add. It does?
Yeah, so I didn't actually hear that Avengers 2 was part of Phase 3. Oh. I thought that was Phase 2 still. But I might be wrong. You might.
I don't really remember, to be honest. I've been hearing actually rumors that the other Avenger might be Miss Marvel.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so
that'd be awesome.
Actually, sorry, Guardians. That would make sense.
Yeah.
Avengers 2 is definitely out before Ant-Man, because Ant-Man's not till, it's like way late in the schedule, and then Doctor Strange hasn't even been started yet. So, and they're saying that there's already been early scripts from Whedon turned in for Avengers.
So excited.
Which is kind of awesome. And I don't know, man. I think they're doing it pretty right now. So as long as they just keep that train a moving, I'm okay.
Also, since we're talking about Marvel stuff, this week the filming started of the S.H.I.E.L.D. television series, and supposedly things have been going really well so far. And, you know, Joss is there on set now shooting it. And I'm beyond excited. I can't actually believe that this is really actually happened.
That's cool. Yeah,
I mean, it's weird because remember on the podcast we sat there and we speculated for like a half episode that one day.
It wasn't we. You literally said what the show should be, and it was what the show is. If that makes any sense.
It was a dream. It was a nerd's dream. It's like, please make a S.H.I.E.L.D. show. But so yeah, that's pretty awesome that it's all come together, and I have really high expectations. Clark Gregg's been tweeting about it a lot, and he seems like really, really into it. And so I'm glad they brought him back as well. So
I actually watched a couple episodes of the Ultimate Spider-Man show this weekend, which is the other animated show along with Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes. Mm-hmm. And Agent Coulson's in it. And I think it's Clark Gregg. Yeah, I think it's him because it sounds like his voice almost perfectly. And he's a main character in the cartoon. So,
oh, that's cool.
But it's good. Check it out if you have a Marvel hankering. And somehow don't have enough Marvel in your life. Right now.
Real, my God. That's Marvel news. So, Matt, tell us about this Sergey Brin rides the subway, because this is something I know nothing of.
It's kind of funny. So Sergey Brin is one of the co-founders of Google with Larry Page. And it's just a funny little kind of slice of life story. But there, a guy was riding the subway home, and he's like a web developer of some sort. And he's riding the subway home. He's on the 3 train. He looked over and he saw a guy wearing the Google glasses which is the new project that Google's putting out soon, which are like, you know, I don't know what else to describe them as, like life filtering glasses. I don't know. They give you information while you're walking and you can get directions. It's all in your
alternate field of view. Reality in a sense.
Like, kind of. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really.
Reality. What do they call it?
Yeah. Yeah. Enhanced, I think. Yeah. So he just kind of strikes up a conversation with the guy and he's talking to him and the answers are really funny. Like if you read them now, you realize that Sergey Brin must have thought this guy's ridiculous because he is talking to him like he's just some Google developer. He's like, oh, do you work for Google? He's like, yeah. And he's like, oh, you know, that's awesome. Are you really excited about the project? Like, how do you really think it's going? And he's like, oh, it's going great. You know, this is really cool. We're really excited to get this out and in developers' hands. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm getting a developer pair. And he was like, he said something else, and the guy was just like, yeah, you know, doing all right kind of thing. And he said right after he got off the train, it occurred to him why the guy looked so familiar. And he was like, oh, my God, I just had a full conversation with Sergey Brin on the 3 train about Google Glasses. And I didn't once realize it was him. Like he said he was like in the back of his mind. He was like, I know who this guy is. Who is this guy? And it occurs to him afterwards. So there's a picture up and there's an article in Huffington Post that we'll, you know, try to link in the feed or whatever, or in our show notes. But it's just really funny to think that, you know, here's this multi-gazillionaire who's pretty much changed the world at this point. And he's riding the 3 train home wearing his Google glasses and every day.
That's awesome. Really cool.
That's so cool. I've seen, animations of how those things work, and like for listeners that haven't ever seen how the Google glasses work, the example I saw was somebody walking down a busy like metropolitan street with a lot of businesses on the sides of like the sidewalk, you know.
Yeah.
And like they were able to like look over at the businesses and like different restaurant menus would pop up depending on what they looked at, and they'd be able to like talk to the glasses and say, hey, I want to go up the street and find a park, and like basically real-time walking instructions would be like piped into their vision. Which is pretty fucking amazing. So they have a lot of potential.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not like you look at someone and it says terminate.
It could.
It will eventually.
Yeah, for assassins. It works for assassins too.
I think it's interesting tech. I think the idea behind it is amazing, you know, but the fact that like Android phones don't even make it through the day of battery life, and this is just going to be another. There's a lot of problems that I think need to be solved before these can be super realistic and normal, But I do think the tech is amazing, and what you're saying is right. And there was a bunch of stuff where he was talking to his friend, and it was like they could pass map points back and forth just like from talking to each other on the glasses, and a bunch of weird stuff. But
it's very cool.
I think it's cool. Speaking of the future,
Conan,
quite possibly the biggest bit of nerd news that we're going to get all year happened in January.
I would just like to say that there are two big stories in our news right now, and they both have an affiliation with Disney.
That's true.
Yeah, because Disney owns
everything.
Yeah.
Other than Google.
Go ahead, Matt. Take it.
J.J. Abrams, originally leaked as being the director and then confirmed by Lucasfilms, the new director for the new Star Wars film.
Hooray!
Awesome. Scott had a good comment on this on the site. I don't know if you remember it, but...
What my comment was?
Yeah, yeah.
I think I said something snarky, but
you did.
I jokingly said it. The comment was, I said I never thought time travel would be part of the Star Wars universe, but there you have it. While he's at it, he should re-edit the original trilogy to replace narrative exposition with flashbacks using clips from the prequel trilogy. Cautiously optimistic.
Aww.
I think you should have read that with an Elcor voice.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I think Ash nailed it in the comments. I was thinking this is that he is 100%. If the writer is good, I think the movie will be good. I don't think Abrams' direction style is anything bad for Star Wars.
No.
But
everybody loved the Star Trek movie. Why would this be any different?
The Star Trek movie was good. And it was stylized, but I don't know if it was great.
Well, we know for sure there will be no Jar Jar Binks.
But it had all the trappings of a J.J. Abrams vehicle, meaning that like time travel is used to like retcon the whole thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously that's going to be avoided in this. I think I'm cautiously optimistic as well. But I think
cautiously optimistic.
I feel like this is a great new direction, because I do feel like he has so much passion for the project. And, you know, I'm sure you guys have been like me and been reading stuff about it in the past few days since it's been released. But he grew up as a massive Star Wars fan. Like, this is his, like, absolute dream project. Mm-hmm. He never cared much about Trek. He just did it because he was approached to do it, and he thought it would be fun to do, like, a big space epic.
Yeah.
But he's always wanted to do Star Wars. So I think, you know, with his love of the franchise and his knowledge of it, I think that's a great motivation to do an amazing film, you know?
Yeah.
As long as it's not like the TV show Revolution, right?
You don't like Is Revolution? The
show? Scott loved Revolution.
No, I'm into it. I'm watching it.
It's awful.
The other thing that came out about this is that Star Wars 2, episodes 2 and 3, the 3D remakes are being delayed essentially into infinity so that this J.J. Abrams project can take the scope of Lucasfilm's work.
That's good.
That is great.
That's awesome.
Releasing them anyway, I think that's a bad way to go.
Yeah.
Also, I think the writer, I can't recall his name right now, but the main writer on this is the guy who wrote Little Miss Sunshine. So they're going for a very, like, yeah, I think they're going for a different sort of vibe, right? So he's used to writing with the team that did, like, what's his name? Robert Orci and Kurtzman.
Right.
So the guys Abrams normally works with, and he's not going to be using them this time. He's using, like, basically a new team. And the creative consultant is the writer from the guy that did Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
And
sweet.
So it's like they have, like, this dream team of just creative individuals that I think really care about the universe. And I think that's going to be really good.
There were many problems with the prequels or whatever. But the real problem I always had with it is that it didn't feel like they were about characters. It felt like it was about this friggin' world that I didn't really have interest in the first, you know, like trade federations and like
politics.
Senate meetings and all this stuff. And you're like, this is not why anyone ever, like, I want space ninjas that run around with space swords and they chop each other up and, you know, like have big epic battles. And there's stuff about dudes like dealing with things. Like, and instead it was just this, it was this weird world story that never made any sense to me. Mm.
No, you're right. Mm-hmm. Even after, like, repeat viewings, like, the politics of Star Wars is just, like, it's really dense, you know? It's like, and it doesn't need to be. It's a science fiction space opera.
And,
like,
I mean,
you know, fantasy story.
Although I made the joke, like, in my mind, I can really see how even, like, the original Star Wars film could have been told, you know, as a J.J. Abrams show, you know, like...
Right.
Where you find out in the third episode that, like, they're brother and sister, flashbacks, you know, like, flash forward, I don't know, something like that. So I mean, like, I made the jokes, but I'm really on board with that. I think it's going to work. I think it'll be great.
Well, I'm glad we're all happy and optimistic about it.
I haven't seen any. Have you guys seen any pitchforks come out yet? I haven't really seen it, but I've learned to not read that anymore.
I think the only pitchforks are people are saying, like, should he be directing both? You know,
that kind of thing. Who gives a crap? Honestly, like, by the time Star Wars ramps up, I mean, Star Trek will have been out and done.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's not like he's filming the two at the same time. It's not like he took both projects on and, like, let's do this both right now, you know?
Yeah. I think the argument is that both are, like, the two most beloved science fiction, you know, space epics directed by the same guy, and that's just kind of weird because there's always been this kind of silly rivalry between the two. So now you have this weird connection where they're, like, both directed by the same person. So it's, like, you know, kind of odd.
Yeah, what if he does a panel? Who's going to show up? The Star Wars or the Star Trek fans? It's going to be a mess.
I don't think it'll be the Trek fans.
It'll be a total CF.
We'll see.
Or the Lost fans or the Alias fans.
Yeah. Right.
Are basically pretty much every good science
Fringe
fiction
fans.
In the past.
Or the Fringe One Revolution fan.
Oh, Hillary.
Scott.
Oh, my God. I have three episodes of Fringe left, and I just can't bring myself to watch them.
Really?
Yeah, I'm so sad.
Let me just ask this, because I just started season 5 of Fringe. Did they bring back evil redheaded Olivia yet?
No, I think that's done.
Damn it. She's the best part of the show.
Why?
Because, you know, evil redhead.
they call her Faux Livia.
If
I remember correctly.
Faux Livia. It's because they actually let that character smile. Let's not get on a tangent about this.
Okay.
Anyway.
Good call. Awesome.
Yeah. So it's interview time, you guys.
It's interview time. Let's see what this mayhem produced.
All right. Hang in there, guys, for our interview with Jessica Marizan about all things community. Try this at home and all sorts of other perverted shenanigans.
Good.
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 This episode, we're actually here with Jessica Marizan, community manager at BioWare and also co-host of Try This at Home on the Nerdist channel. It's also Community Manager Appreciation Day, so we're super happy to have Jessica here with us, and we're going to ask her some really interesting questions and be entertained by her awesomeness. Woo-hoo. So, hey, Jessica.
Hey.
Welcome.
God. Now I'm really nervous. I'm not going to entertain anyone. Set a high standard for me.
We really do.
I know.
We like to set things as high as we can and then just let it drift
normally,
down.
Normally, as part of my contract, I ask for only green Skittles and I say, don't tell anyone that I'm going to entertain. Just say she will show up.
Yeah, it's usually my job to sort the Skittles, so I can attest to that.
Yeah.
Nice. It's because she's got the dirtiest hands.
Oh.
I don't even know what that joke. I don't know what the joke meant.
I don't know where you're going with that.
I don't know. I have no idea.
Awesome. Well, okay, so I'll kick it off. So people know you probably the most for being the awesome kick-ass community manager at BioWare. So what made you want to be a community manager?
So I started my life out. I was born in Virginia. And wait, this actually is part of the story. I wasn't joking.
It really is. And sometimes, just really quickly, sometimes she does slip into a Southern accent, even though she doesn't say that she does.
Only when I'm mad or drunk.
Totally acceptable.
I was born in Virginia about, I want to say like a short distance away from Williamsburg. So I grew up going to Williamsburg and I always wanted to be an archaeologist. So I went to Berkeley and studied archaeology and it was awesome until I realized that I'm not very good at being outdoors. So archaeology was a pretty bad move on my part. And then I found out that it is really hard to work in a museum and be awesome and do all of the awesome. Like I always thought to myself, I'm going to be like a museum exhibit designer. I'm going to make like all these awesome exhibits and I'm going to curate all of this stuff. But apparently what I thought was one job is like actually like 15 different jobs. And I was like, well, screw that. I don't want to just like pick the typeface. That's dumb. That's a job, like just picking the typeface and like making the signage. No, that's stupid. So that didn't happen either. So I went and I was like, I clearly need to figure my life out. So I went to grad school and I did my grad studies in material and visual culture. And I ended up kind of focusing on pop culture and media and mass consumption. And so because I had gone to Comic-Con for so many years, I decided that I would focus on my dissertation on Comic-Con and cosplay. And in kind of the anthropology world, community is like a big part of outreach and invested stakeholders. And it was always just part of my lexicon working in archaeology and anthropology. But outside of archaeology, community management kind of blew up as this big thing that people started hiring for within the past like 10, 15 years. So after I graduated from grad school and did my dissertation on Comic-Con and cosplay and community building and fandom, I was working in market research, but I was still really interested in kind of my anthropological roots. And during that time, my best friend, Holly Conrad, who co-founded Crabcat with me, Crabcat Industries, we were just like, we just want to start having fun and making costumes and having fun all the time. So we actually met Hillary that way, which is by proxy, how I know all of you. And so Hillary came on board and taught us how to be a real business. And
thanks for that.
Made us legitimate. And she kind of got us kickstarted in marketing and PR and figuring out what's what. And so an opportunity came up for me to apply for a job at BioWare, and I applied and they didn't accept me. And then like 6 months later, another job came up and I had been kind of networking with different people in EA and BioWare on Twitter. So don't underestimate the importance of your personal brand. And eventually I got hired and
that's amazing.
Probably a way longer story than it needs to be. I'm sorry.
No, that's like, a great story. I actually, it's funny.
You should just cut all of that out.
No, it's great. I love that story.
That's all we've done so far. We can't cut that.
Yeah, I think the thing that's interesting about most community managers is that they always tend to come from very different walks of life. And, you know, you might be the only one with an archaeology background that I know of.
There's not. I'm not. I know another one.
Are you serious? Beverly, no way.
Her name's Beverly Reynolds. She went to Johns Hopkins, and she also focused on museum studies and archaeology.
Oh, that is really cool.
I know, I'm way less unique than I thought it was.
See, it's weird because I first ran into you guys at Comic-Con when you guys were cosplaying as the Mass Effect crew. And I just remember walking around on the floor and I told Holly this story to the point where she was like, oh yeah, you're that annoying guy. I remember you guys walking around with the giant animatronic Rex and stuff and I was absolutely blown away. And like from that moment forward, I ran home and like looked up Crabcat and just to figure out what you guys were all about. And that was just must have been a huge, absolutely massive moment for you guys to see that kind of reaction. Because I remember like there were like hundreds of people following you guys around the Comic-Con floor, like, you know, the Pied Piper. It was kind of ridiculous.
It was weird because that kind of event was twofold. I was doing my dissertation because I knew I was going to be working on the costumes just for fun. And I didn't want to try to write my dissertation and go to Comic-Con or have to choose one or the other. So I was just like, whatever. My dissertation advisor didn't like the totally kick-ass proposal I sent to him first, which would have been amazing, by the way, but it will never see the light of day. And Holly was using Comic-Con and making costumes as kind of a walking portfolio for a job that she thought she wanted. And then she later worked at a bunch of shops and realized that she did not like working in shops. So I think it was definitely a very good experience for everyone just to figure out not just what you want to do, but what you don't want to do. I think after being involved in Crabcat and doing my undergrad and doing my dissertation and my master's, I learned a lot more about what I don't like doing than what I like doing. And the things that are left over, I guess, are the things that I can stand about myself and about other people.
Well, then I think the next time I ran into you guys was the following year at Comic-Con again at the BioWare base. And most of you guys at that point, that's the first time I met Hillary as well. You guys were in your jumpsuits and you were working the base across the street, I think in the gas lamp. And shortly after that is, I think, when you got hired. So what did it feel like going from being a big fan of BioWare stuff to actually getting hired? I mean, did you totally flip out? I mean, it was very
surreal. And I'm a pessimist, so I just assumed I wouldn't get hired. And Holly and Hillary had to be like, no, you'll get hired. You will totally get the job. You're so dumb. And I was like, I'm not going to get hired. So I might as well have fun wearing a jumpsuit and pretend like I'm in a danger zone, Top Gun, in the meantime.
To be fair, Jessica, I mean, you did so much for that event and it was almost like a working interview. I mean, you were on it. I mean, it was kind of amazing, actually, guys, just being behind the scenes and seeing how much ownership Jessica took on the whole event. I mean, she really did kick ass, and it was really awesome to see, you know, the payoff of that for her, you know, really working her ass off and then getting the job. It was really cool.
It was definitely an apprentice style interview, which that was interesting. And that's all I will say about that. But working for BioWare is awesome. I have actually been with BioWare for a year and a half now. It seems like longer and shorter at the same time, but it's crazy. But it's really good. I'm actually in an expanded role now. I started out just kind of as their social media manager. And now I think I was community and social media manager, and now I'm their community and new media manager, which basically is only one word change, but it's an entirely different skill set. So I've been working really closely on a project that I didn't think I could do, that my manager, Fernando, just was like, you can do it, because if you couldn't, I wouldn't have hired you. But
that's really awesome.
That's going to be hopefully coming out, and I can talk about it soonish. But it's a lot more like software development than I ever thought I would be doing. When you're working in community, you're usually that person who helps out in the games, who makes recommendations, but doesn't actually develop anything like with your own hands. And this has definitely been kind of a 180. I manage all of our community events now, and that's actually something that I have. I managed myself personally last year, and I'm passing the torch to Chris Priestley, who has been with BioWare. You know, he's a pillar of BioWare. He's been with BioWare for, I think, 12 years, and he's always been kind of the forum guy. So now he's the event guy. And I think he's just awesome at events. I wouldn't be a BioWare fan if it weren't for Chris. Yeah, Chris was the first BioWare employee I ever met. He was the guy who encouraged me to apply to foster my, you know, desire to do community management. So I'm just really, really pleased that I get to wake up every day and work with one of my best friends. And Chris is awesome. I adore him.
He's always been really nice to us as well. So we appreciate him.
We love Chris.
Nice guy to run into at shows, and he's just always pretty warm and friendly, even if he's been standing on his feet for 15 hours, you know.
I know. He is so good. So I'm really excited to see what he kind of pulls out of his hat for this event season, because, you know, he's owning it this year. And I for the first time since I've been, I guess before I started working with BioWare, since I was doing that apprentice style interview for Comic-Con, this will be the first time that I get to go to the conventions and kind of experience cons the same way a lot of other devs do, where, you know, I get my schedule and I do the things that I'm supposed to do, and I'm not worried about who's eating or what's on fire or, you know, what's going on. So Chris
what is on fire.
It's awesome. most things.
Yes.
Most times.
That's true. So you mentioned Crabcat and, you know, all of the fun things that we got to do together in a garage in hot weather and sweating in the sweatshop. But if you could go back to it kind of was a sweatshop. I'm not going to lie. We worked really hard.
Yeah, there was a lot of sweating.
There really was. It's true. So it's if LA. You could, it was, and it was, that was like the worst garage ever, by the way. Anyway. So if you could go back to 2010 and your future self could talk to your former self, what kind of advice would you give yourself?
2010 me. Gosh. First of all, I would tell myself to stop eating so much candy.
You did eat a lot of candy.
I'd be like, dude, you know that diet that you keep saying you're going to go on? You're not going to go on it, and you are going to look fat when you were dressed up as Nightmare in a leotard. Standing next to female
Jessica,
Dr. Strange. You're going to look really fat, and you're going to regret it, and you're not going to share those photos. So put the Snickers bar down. I don't care if it is subsidized. Put it down. Secondly, I would tell myself the recipe for the perfect sandwich, because I discovered it recently. It's a cheese sandwich from Whole Foods with goat cheese on ciabatta bread.
That sounds actually pretty damn good.
It's really good. It's really good.
Is it toasted or is it cold?
No, it's cold, but they have to squish it together so that it doesn't fall, like everything fall out. Don't get any lettuce. That complicates it. Tomatoes only if they're thin slicely. Like they have to, the thin sliced tomatoes. And then some peppercinis and olive tapenade on one side, tomato aioli on the other side. There perfect sandwich. I would have spent a lot less money at Taco Bell had I known the perfect sandwich. So I would have told myself that. And I would have also told myself to not worry so much about where I thought I was heading, because life generally works itself out. And stress just sends cortisone or whatever, like that stress releasing hormone, and you just gain weight in your stomach, so that's always bad. So just don't stress. You won't You won't be a fatty. That's what I would have learned. And I would be super thin. I would always be eating the perfect sandwich and I would not be stressed. That's what I would have learned.
Now, did you find that managing the stress also factored into the completion of your dissertation? You know, like theoretically, if there were other people in our listening community that were also working on dissertations that were also dealing with stress, would you have any advice for them as well?
Scott's working on his dissertation.
I have shown my this is important. Every time someone asks you to read your dissertation, they do not mean it. Because when you send them your dissertation, you will never hear back from them about it. You'll be like, did you read it? Because you didn't say anything to me about it. And they'll be like, oh yeah, you know, I haven't gotten into it yet. Or they will just never email you again. And you'll be like, well, I guess my dissertation is bullshit. So
do you even have people asking you for your dissertation? That blows my mind.
Like all the time. And
I will read your dissertation.
No, Scott. You cannot join the ranks of people who have said that to me. Because it always ends up badly. There are some people that I admire out there in the world who won't look me in the eye because of, I don't know, maybe something in chapter 3.
Cover to cover. But, I'll read it cover to cover. I'll send you my email address and you send it to me.
Uh-oh. Scott, just be very careful who allow read your dissertation. Everyone out there listening, just think about, okay, if they read my dissertation and they hate it, do I still want to be friends with them? Just think about it. Think about
it. I understand.
I'm just too lazy. That's why I've never offered to read Scott's.
It's not done yet. I'm not going to lie. It is not done.
Oh, okay.
Don't. It won't be. And here's my second piece of advice that was unsolicited. It will never be very good to you. So you should have someone else look at it who is either getting paid to look at it or who can't leave you.
Oh no.
To be honest.
Are you serious?
Yeah, because you'll never think it's good enough. And so no one will see it. And pretty much you'll just screw everything over because you'll always think of it as a first draft.
I feel like we are kindred spirits. This means a lot to me.
I could go on a motivational tour about the pitfalls of writing a dissertation, and it would just end up being like, take some antidepressants and don't give a shit about your dissertation because you'll hate it no matter what, but it's probably okay because only like 10 people will read it anyway, unless you dumb it down and turn it into some kind of pop culture book, then everyone will read it. Oh, but then it's still a lot of time.
Amazing.
Sorry.
Did you learn something, Scott?
Yeah, I did. I didn't mean to divert the podcast.
No, it's okay.
I know, actually, to be honest, I know there's at least one other person out there that this applies to, so.
Yeah.
Quit school and write a coffee table book. It requires a lot less indexing at the end.
For sure, right? Okay. I agree.
The publisher will do that. It's fine.
Scott has his future planned out now.
CoffeeTableBooks.com. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
I wrote your resignation letter.
Oh, no.
All right. Let's head back to community stuff for just a couple minutes. And I did want to talk about sort of your whirlwind year because you've managed with this job to go to a lot of incredible places. And I have a couple questions. Are you like sick of cons now? Do you hate them? Do they still kind of hold the same magic as they used to when you were just a con goer? Or is it like just work now?
Working a con is very different from being at a con. I will say that working at con has made me feel so much better about the stupid things I did at cons when I was attending. Like, I would worry so much and be like, oh my God, that really cool celebrity or like very cool artist or whoever that I met, I sounded so stupid to them and I'm so embarrassed. But I'm going to be perfectly honest. They probably did not have any clue who I was, and they were probably so hyped up on like caffeine or sleep deprived that they wouldn't remember me. So it's fine because that's me at a con. I remember everyone, but if you introduce yourself to me at a con, you also have to tell me your Twitter name and I make you tweet at me afterwards so that I remember, because I just have like fever dreams the whole time.
Oh yeah, I mean, even as an attendee, it's sort of like a whirlwind, you know, 3 or 4 days, and it's just so filled with like adrenaline and excitement and good stuff and bad stuff, but I can't, you know, working it must be a completely different experience because you're, you know, you're seeing a lot of the people that you're communicating with as community manager all year round that come up and, you know, wave to you and you're like, I don't know who the F you are.
I'm actually pretty good at remembering people's names and faces. So it's really fun. I might not immediately place someone, which is why I'm like, tell me your Twitter handle and the last thing we tweeted each other about. And then I remember, and it feels like high school reunion, even though that person's never met me before, but I think we're internet friends. But yeah, I mean, I think that the difference is that when you attend a con, there's kind of this feeling of going on a journey, and there's a lot of kind of bittersweet feelings at the end of the con because it's over and you have to wait until the next time to feel that kind of ritualistic journey. This is what I wrote my dissertation on, by the way, just
nice.
Yes. So there's that. But then when you're working a con, you don't have that kind of like feeling of, oh, it's over, I'm so sad that it's over. Like, you don't really have that because you're like, okay, well, the next con's in 2 months, period. I mean, there is some, like, for maybe more niche cons like Geek Girl Con or something, it's like, oh, that was really fun, I can't wait to come back next year. But I feel like as an attendee, you never know what your next con is going to be. You don't really know if you're going to come back next year. Can you get tickets? Can you get hotel rooms? But working it, it's just kind of on the roster. I made this sound way less romantic than I wanted.
No, you know, it's kind of like we're like the ride operators at the Jungle Cruise at Disneyland. That's how I like to think of it.
There's always the next ride to the next cruise to take people on. Didn't you used to work for a cruise line, Hillary?
I did.
Wait, you never told us that. These are the secrets.
No, I was a lead analyst at Princess Cruises. So it was just a short gig, but it was very interesting and very enlightening. I don't know if I'll ever take a cruise again.
Okay.
And that's all I'll say about that.
I've heard that people disappear on cruises quite a bit.
What?
And you would be correct.
Isn't that crazy, guys?
What do you mean disappear? It's a boat. What are you talking about?
Yeah. And what's the, like, if someone, okay, think about this. If you were to fall off a ship, by the time that someone notified someone who notified someone who notified the someone else who then notified the next in charge who then notified the captain, by that point, the ship has already sailed so far and with current and water, like temperatures and everything else, by the time they actually got the boat to turn around, which they wouldn't do, guys, they just wouldn't.
Yeah.
You're dead. You're dead.
Oh my God.
And there's a lot of people who die on cruises for some reason, like a lot of older people go on cruises, and it might be particular to the brand as well. But yeah, there's a lot of death on cruise ships.
Wow.
And norovirus is like no joke. Like, people get so sick, and it's the worst kind of sick you can even imagine, being in close quarters with people. It's
and
awful.
You're sick at sea. They basically
it's like projectile vomiting and like, oh, it's awful. It's awful.
I love how we always get
plague.
Yeah, exactly. But you're confined on a ship with these people in the middle of the ocean.
So, hooray, yes, Hillary. Yes, Hillary. Working a con is just like working a cruise.
No,
it's and like the norovirus. It's exactly the same.
Nope. I'm gonna take everything out that you just said and make it a little more succinct. Working a con is just like working a cruise. You might die.
That's the best analogy that we can come up with is like being on a cruise. It's not like playing in a band and like living on the road or anything like that. Like, like it's a cruise and you can die.
All I know, the only thing that I can really recall right now about working a con is how bad your feet hurt. But that's probably true for attendees as well.
Yeah, that is. I wear orthopedic shoes.
Yeah, see, that's the way smart. To go. Yeah, Jessica's smart. Hillary, you always wear like giant boots and stuff.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah,
I do.
You got to wear some like grandpa New Balance and just be comfortable.
You guys don't know, but I seriously wear like knee-high boots every single day. No, I mean, it's like a thing in my life. It's I can't wear the shoes. Yeah, it's strange. Anyway, we're going to go a little Lipton style here. So, Jessica, what's your favorite swear word?
Uh-oh.
I like the word fuck a lot.
And what's the best usage of that word?
Oh my God. There's another word that I really like, but I can't say it because it's a bad word.
Oh God. And fuck is not a bad word.
No, you hate this word. It's your least favorite word.
Don't say it. Don't
I'm not going to say it.
Is it the see you next Tuesday word?
Yeah, I really, that's my new favorite, but it's bad. So I have to be careful who I say it around. But I like calling people that when I'm mad. Oh, not like, not in a derogatory sense, like male or female. I just like get really like snappy and I think it's a funny word.
Is that when the Southern accent comes out too?
Yeah, there you go.
I don't think you can say that word with a Southern accent.
You can't either. It just sounds
weird. No, you can. You just have to say, bless your heart when you say it.
What?
Yeah, you have to say, wow, bless your heart afterwards. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I do really like fuck and I like cussing a lot. But I feel like cussing, like most things, requires a little bit of class and you have to know when to do it.
And it takes some conviction too, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is there any like amazing usage of cuss words that you've seen in the, in like the community or no? I always love that. It's always my favorite. I always love it when I hear like is how people cuss. Yeah.
In the BioWare community?
Yeah, right? Or any,
I mean, or really, in a community.
Or with Crabcat or whoever. You know, you've dealt with a lot of communities, so like when dealing with them, you know, you don't have to be specific about when or who or what, but
I think sometimes, not with cussing, but I see a lot of people get really creative with insulting people using like Mass Effect terminology.
That's awesome.
Like son of a sandal, which like, I don't know, sandal is a person, so you wouldn't say a sandal, but like everyone knows what you mean. You're like, oh my God, sandal's kind of stupid. And so what would sandal's son be like? Yeah. I do when I get mad sometimes. Oh my God, what is it that everyone called, that Jacob called Garrus to be insulting to him?
Because sometimes cuddlebone.
Yeah, sometimes I call people cuddlebone when I'm really mad. Like stupid cuddlebone, because it's close to the C word that I like, but I can use it in mixed company and no one goes. But
that's awesome.
A Turian would know that I was being insulting.
Amazing. Well, let's shift gears and start talking about Try This at Home, because I've watched all the episodes. I love it. I think you guys are hilarious. And you must be incredibly excited and stoked because I hear you're coming back for another season, right?
We are. We've shot two episodes so far. We're on a pretty tight schedule to get everything out. Last time we kind of dragged it on for like ages, but this time, so my weekends are totally gone to just shooting stuff, which is not something that I would complain about at all. Hillary was on our pilot episode and she dressed herself up like a condom and it was her.
She laughed hysterically.
It was great.
Yeah.
I was like, you bought that.
I did. It was actually my idea.
You bought that outfit. And then you acted like you didn't want to wear it, but you for sure bought it so that you wouldn't get paint on your clothes.
It's not
my fault if you looked like you were in Willy Wonka, like Mike TV, or a big condom.
I would also like to point out that in that episode, when I wasn't dressed as a condom, I was wearing boots.
Yeah, I did notice that.
You probably wear boots
to clean the studio.
It's true. Painting, boots. Perfect.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I guess
it's been good.
Actually, excellent. Jess, at your wedding, it was really funny because the table that I was seated at, that's kind of how they knew me, as the human condom.
Oh my God, are you serious?
I'm not even joking.
With all my Nerdist friends, and yeah. I didn't even think about that. Oh my God. No,
it was hilarious.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because for our listeners that don't know what Try This at Home is, I want to, you know, plug your stuff and make sure they watch it. So it's on the Nerdist channel. But conceptually, how did you, and I'm assuming Holly, come up with the idea for Try This at Home, and really kind of what are you aiming for with the show in season two?
So, Holly's always been a really amazing artist. I've known her forever and I kind of always looked up to her in terms of her art and her illustrating and sculpting and things like that. I, on the other hand, had always been really involved in like theater and performing and improv, and I've always kind of considered myself above and beyond everything else an entertainer. Going back to my life story, the reason that I did anthropology, other than being born in Virginia and always wanting to be an archaeologist, was that my mom told me that I could not be a theater major when I went to college. I couldn't even double major in it. She told me it would be a distraction and that you wouldn't get a job. And little did she know that no one would be getting jobs. So I should have just majored in whatever I wanted. But I'm glad, because the theater majors and art majors at Berkeley were insane. So it was okay. It was fine. I'm sorry if you're a theater major at Berkeley, anyone listening. So I've always been a performer. I'm really big into making people laugh. I'm not really into the whole like stand-up comedy scene. I think I would totally fall flat on my face and not be funny. But I've just always been really into just kind of conversational humor and just, you know, making people chuckle. So my angle on that spin was always kind of, can we do this to entertain people? Can we, even if it's just sitting in a room, live streaming while we're working, I would always be the one trying to ham it up and make people mm-hmm. laugh. And so we kind of put those two things together. I always had that in the back of my mind. I always thought, you know, maybe we can try to be like the Mythbusters or get a TV show or something. And Holly was always, you know, really focused on this idea of like being the next Stan Winston. And so we kind of combined two visions and had an opportunity after the Comic-Con movie came out to pitch a show to Chris Hardwick. And Holly was like, oh, I met Chris Hardwick doing it with the Comic-Con movie. He wants us to come pitch tomorrow. Do you think we can make a pitch for him? And I'm like, I already have like 12 treatments for 12 different shows. So let's just pick the one we like best and pitch that.
That's incredible.
So it was great. And it turned out this kind of, you know, fun DIY angle was something that Nerdist was really looking for. And it worked out because they already had a cosplay show with Chloe Dykstra, who is awesome. Her show is called Just Cause, and she's a good friend of ours. And so we got to not just teach people how to make costumes, but we got to focus on a lot of different things. I think that the big difference between season one and season two is kind of through learning about production myself. I'm trying to scale it down to projects that are more manageable on a lower budget for people at home and for people with different skill sets, so that, you know, maybe you can't mod a car or never have an interest, but I bet you can probably teach yourself how to make a Henson style puppet, maybe. So that might be an episode for next season.
Mm-hmm. Well, hold on. Let's talk about that. I may have seen some pictures because I follow you, obviously, on the social networks. And I saw a picture of you standing next to some Muppets. And first of all, I was insanely jealous, and I may have wept and clawed at my flesh because I'm a huge Muppets fan. So did you get to hang out with Muppets or what?
I did. I actually I went to the Henson Creature Shop and learned about puppet making. And I actually, just the other week, one of the amazing shows on the Nerdist channel is Neil Patrick Harris's own show called Neil's Puppet Dreams. And it's a very cool show because Henson right now is kind of coming to this different point where Disney owns the Muppet, I guess, copyright, trademark, and everything. So Henson is getting to do a lot of non-Muppet things. And they have this kind of branch of the Henson company that's alternative Henson puppets, and they have a really awesome show called I think it's like Unstrung. It's just hilarious and it's really raunchy. And so Neil's Puppet Dreams is kind of on the same point. So I actually had the opportunity to meet Brian Henson the other week at a wrap party for Neil's Puppet Dreams, and it was just I almost like died. I thought I don't get very starstruck except for Doc Hammer from Venture Brothers. Just, I don't know why.
Of course. Yeah.
But other than that, I just, you know, I freak out about things like Henson or the craftsmanship that goes into that. So I think meeting like the one person that I was like, you and your dad are really the reason why I wanted to become a creative entertainer and, you know, sit at home and sing songs instead of studying algebra. That was just huge for me. So yeah, I think that was like literally the highlight of my life. And I really wish that a car had run over me afterwards, because
that's incredible.
I don't think that I can top that ever.
Did you guys shoot some stuff there, like for an upcoming episode, or was it just part of the Neil's Puppet Dreams stuff.
No. There's definitely going to be a Henson episode for, it has to be approved. We'll see, but it should be.
That's really cool.
There should be a puppet episode of Try This at Home.
That is so cool.
You didn't hear it from me.
So cool. That's amazing. I've always been a Muppets fan. Fraggle Rock and stuff was like my bread and butter as a kid. I watched probably every single episode. Did you also kind of have that the strange, like, did you ever wonder what the Doozers Bridges tasted like?
I did. Oh my God. I think that they tasted like rock candy or sugar cubes.
That's kind of what I was thinking too.
Yeah, I was telling Brian Henson, I was like, I used to eat a lot of sugar cubes because I pretended that they were little Doozer buildings. And he was like, that's so cute. I can't believe you don't have diabetes. And I was like, me either.
Because
it was crazy.
We went after those Doozer buildings, like they were like crack, you know, they would like scar buildings. I was like, man, those must be the best tasting things on the planet. And
think
unfortunately,
it's candy.
It must be something like that.
It's super tasty. It has to be. I think the thing that I walked away, you know, have you ever had that idea where you don't really want to meet someone you admire because you're worried that they're going to be a total asshole super hot Hollywood or whatever? I think I was really worried that I would go to Henson and they would just break my heart, but they were literally the nicest people I've ever met. They're so down to earth. And I was like, you guys really incredible and awesome you are. And we're just all like absolutely normal people, very, very low key, really excited, very into the creative process. And I think that that's something where you're kind of like, okay, in this crazy changing world where pretty much it seems like every company is like a subsidiary of some other crazy company. And then you get to the top and probably GE owns everything. It's just weird to go to a big company and get a really small company feeling from it.
Mm-hmm. That is cool. Yeah. I mean, that is incredible. I'm jealous. So super jealous.
So Jessica,
well,
now
jealous, you'll get to see it.
Hooray. So actually, now that you've kind of conquered, you know, you attained your goal of working at BioWare, and so you're like queen of community, you're on the Nerdist, so you've conquered TV in my mind. What's next?
What is next? I think I want to continue with some of the BioWare projects that I can't wait to talk about, just because I think that community right now is seen industry-wide as kind of a part of marketing and PR, or on the other hand, is part of kind of customer service. And I think community belongs in its own special little area that, as an anthropologist, would be a really natural feeling for me. And so I'm going to keep working to get more people to see that community shouldn't just be a sub-department of some other department. It really needs to be its own special thing that is not just, you know, in BioWare, but everywhere. So I'm going to keep trying to fight to champion a lot of groundbreaking community things. And I think on the Crab Cat side, just continuing making entertainment, making people laugh. I would love to take some sketch classes and just figure out that good at sitting around people off, and then when I'm asked to rep it, I don't know that I could do that. So just kind of stretching my wings and learning new things about the entertainment and comedy world would be great.
That is cool. It sounds like you've made some contacts that could easily help you talk to the right people, at least, you know.
We'll see. I will probably continue that DIY aesthetic and just, you know, go read a book about it or go take a class or something and just, you know, build from the ground up. But I am a lifelong learner and I get really bored and fidgety. So that, or I get really, really tired and I just lay in bed all day. So we'll see.
That happens to the best of us. So I am a fan of your podcast, and I want to kind of give you shit because I want more episodes of it. When are we going to get more episodes? I know. When are we going to get more episodes of The Perfect Squares? Because I thought it was great.
Yeah, for everyone who's listening to this, don't go look up my podcast that I have with my other best friend, Lizzie, the Perfect Squares podcast, which is available on iTunes and Zune if Lizzie set that up. But it's just a fun podcast. And it was something that we started because we were like, okay, we have all this ambition. Lizzie's a PhD student in physics. I want to be famous unashamedly. And we just had this outlet where we're like, you know, we should just do something that it really doesn't matter if anything ever happens, if anyone ever listens to it. We just won't even track what kind of views it gets. Just have fun. And I think that because we did that and because it was just for us, we had a really like well put together and a polished podcast that worked for us. And it wasn't, you know, a formula that we'd copied from anyone else. It was just kind of the podcast that we would want to listen to. And because we're not doing it for anyone else, we oftentimes put it at totally the bottom of the pile of things to do. But I did hear that Lizzie got a podcasting mic for Christmas.
Nice.
So I do feel a bit obligated to do a podcast. So I told her, actually, I didn't even tell her this. I heard her say this on another podcast that she was going to try to podcast sometime this month. So we have 4 more days and I don't want to tell her that I listened to her on that podcast because I don't want her to get an inflated ego or anything, but I think I'm going to try to record an episode with her within the next few days and crank Excellent. That out. But I can't guarantee that we will ever have more than 5 episodes in a year.
That's awesome. It's light years from when I think we tried to do a podcast as a big group once at Crabcat, and the entire time Lizzie and I just sang Masterpiece Theater for like hours and hours and hours.
Yeah, I think that whole podcast ended up being about what to call a podcast.
Yeah, it kind of did. But yeah, no, we should do a wife swap or something at some point. If you guys want to, you know, do something fun on the podcast side, we'd love to do something like that.
Oh, on the podcast side. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
In our regular life, we aren't actually swingers.
It's like, are we going to have a key in the bowl party? Okay.
Oh, boy.
Ooh. Right.
I'm on a podcast. I have to pretend to be agreeable to whatever you say, I suppose. So
it's been a while since I've done a key in the bowl party, at least a couple weeks.
Did you wear a mask?
I just went over to Scott's house and we put our keys in the bowl. And
and Scott cried about being in grad school and writing a dissertation.
Yes, it's true. Then he made me go home by myself.
We all got to wear masks, though, like Eyes Wide Shut. Not that I've ever seen that movie, but I heard that that's what they do in that movie.
times.
Amazing. So for probably one of the biggest things that someone would want to hear, you know, you've come up. You've told us kind of your story, but you've come up against some obstacles and you've overcome them. So what would be your advice to people who, you know, maybe want to do what you do or, you know, have big dreams and big ideas and they just don't know how to attain them? What would be your advice?
It would be twofold. Number one, don't get so hung up on your everyday obstacles, because I think everyone has problems that are just kind of hindrances or reasons that they can't do something. But the more people you talk to about their like crazy personal life, the more you realize that everyone has their own shit that they have to deal with. And it just that the people who are at the top just don't let that get to them. And that's something that I'm still learning every day is I meet really successful people and I'm like, oh my God, you have a horrifying personal story. I can't believe that you got over that and did like this crazy cool thing. And they're like, yeah, you just, you know, you don't let it own it. Two, I would say just don't stop trying. I think a lot of people in this world and in this economy try to be realistic about what they can achieve. You know, I wouldn't say like go throw all your money into some crazy harebrained scheme, but there's no reason why you can't do your crazy harebrained scheme on the side while you still live responsibly. And people always tell you reasons why you shouldn't dream big or why you should settle for less. And I just think that those people are a little afraid and they just, you know, they care about you and they don't want you to be disappointed, but you have to ask yourself, are you going to be more disappointed if you don't try or if you try and don't get where you want to be? So I think that's a personal decision for everyone, but I think that it's always better to smile and nod at people who try to tell you to be rational and more grounded about the choices you make. And I think they have a lot less fun than the people who just chase their dreams like crazy.
Good advice.
Definitely. So we have a nerd appropriate signature question that we ask of most people when we have them on the show. And it is, what is your secret nerdy hobby or passion that you're almost too embarrassed to share with the world, but you're going to share with the world anyway? So what do you collect? What do you do that's like sort of like your closet secret hobby? Uh-oh.
Okay, so two things. The first one's not really that nerdy. Okay, it's really nerdy. I just thought about it a little bit. Okay, two things. One, I'm really into makeup, which I think you're not supposed to be if you're like a nerdy girl, or if you are, everyone doesn't take you seriously. Like, I feel like I'm not a girly girl in the way I dress. I really like wearing t-shirts and jeans. No, I don't like wearing jeans. I think jeans constrict me and make my legs feel not free. I like wearing leggings. Just t-shirts and not fancy leggings, just like freaking like black $15 leggings from Target. I dress really casual and almost kind of like a fancy girl dresses when she goes to the gym. That's me on a normal day. But I am really, really into makeup. So I will have this like crazy made up face and I will be wearing a hoodie from American Apparel. But I'm really, really into makeup, and I've always been into makeup, and I always feel a lot better about myself when I put on makeup and just get really into that. I just bought like the Cadillac of makeup cases. It has an MP3 player in it, guys.
What? That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got like LED lights around the side. Like, you know, the like when you think of like Hollywood makeup, you think those like light bulbs around the mm-hmm. sides of the mm-hmm. mirror, the vanity thing. It's like that.
It's incredible.
I know. I'm so freaking out about it. Now I don't, because tip for the ladies or the men who like to put on makeup, when you are not putting on makeup in natural lighting, your makeup is going to be way too dark because indoor lighting is kind of more yellowish and it's mm-hmm. not a true light. So you'll go outside and you'll look like a freak. So this is going to light me way better and I'm really excited about it. Point A/B, I really like, I'm a big lighting nerd and I really love lighting.
You love that. Yeah.
I love lighting. I love it. And I would say point two, which is the thing that is probably more weird, but I'm not ashamed of it, is I am really into like reenactments and living history and like Revolutionary War and Civil War reenactments.
That is so cool.
I was part of a fife and drum corps when I was in high school, and I have like a $3,000 snare drum that I used to do reenactments with. And before I got my first like actual professional job, I worked for many years at an apple farm that was a kind of a living history apple farm. So I taught little kids how to do candle dipping and tomahawk throwing and archery and stuff. And
I just love it.
Oh, I do all the time. I mean, the weird thing is that a lot of people who are also into that are very, very, very like churchy and Republican. And I'm not that liberal. I'm just kind of like, do what you want and stop stealing my money, government. So I guess I'm a libertarian because the government takes all my money because more money, more problems. But so I don't get into it as much as I would like, because I just don't like when people turn things into politics. I'm like, dude, I am wearing a colonial skirt because I don't want to talk about the real world. I want to live in this crazy fantasy world where I'm also a mage. But
I think you glossed over something very important. Is that, were you trying to tell us that you were also proficient at tomahawk throwing?
I can teach you how to throw a tomahawk.
That is awesome.
That is awesome.
Whenever the community gets too rowdy at the next convention, you can just whip one of those puppies out.
I know. I'm better at archery, so I should just like quit BioWare and try to become like the
Hunger Games.
The Lara Croft.
A crime fighter.
Yeah.
You could just get a nice costume and comb the streets at night with a bow.
I feel like you have to move to Seattle to do that, because that's where all the like costume vigilantes live.
Have you seen that documentary by chance, the one that's on Netflix about the real life superheroes? I can't remember.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I would never do that. I have exercise-induced asthma, which I think is just an excuse for me to feel a little bit more like Woody Allen, but have an excuse for it. So I'm not very good at running or being outside or exercising. So I could never actually be a costume vigilante, but I can certainly watch about it on Netflix.
There you go. I'm there with you. I think mine is just laziness, infused laziness.
See, at least I have a disability.
Excellent.
Awesome. Just called you out.
I know. It's true. What's the line? I only run if I'm being chased.
Does it happen a lot?
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
If I was being chased, I would just fall over and play dead and hope that I don't get eaten. And if I do get eaten, I hope I have a parasite inside me that kills whatever thing is eating me.
I like the assumption that if you're being chased, it's because somebody wants to eat you.
Yeah.
Unless it's a zombie, and then I will outsmart it and I will fight it back. But then I'll stop because I'll realize that that's just in the movies, and then I would die.
No, but you could throw the tomahawk, so you're all good.
Yeah. Just aim for the
head. I didn't know I had a tomahawk in this scenario.
Well, now you have one.
Okay, I would probably overshoot, and I would hit like a bullseye behind it, and I would forget what the point of the exercise was.
The zombie's just walking in front of a bullseye?
Yeah, in this scenario.
Oh, okay.
Because I also have a tomahawk in this scenario, so the scenario is pretty much whatever I imagine it to be.
I just didn't know there was always bullseyes around when you had tomahawks.
It's a tomahawk throwing competition.
Oh, okay.
And zombies are there.
Chasing
you. That is the only conceivable reason I would have a tomahawk in my hand.
Okay.
Good stuff.
Good.
Good.
Well, good.
Sweet.
I have nothing else to say to that.
I thought that was the end of the podcast. And I was like, oh, wow, that was a really abrupt end to the podcast.
Yeah. Good.
Good. Thanks so much, and we'll see you later.
Cut to the end. No, not even that. You wouldn't even say that. You just go, good. And then the podcast would end.
Good.
Good music.
This usually leads to some really creative editing with music and sound effects, and then it just totally sounds like we planned it that way.
Yeah.
No, it wouldn't at all. It would just be Hillary going, good, good. Maybe a dubstep of Hillary going, good, for like a minute and a half. Good.
Oh my
good.
God.
Good, 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 good.
That'd be brilliant.
I always love that whenever I'm talking to Jessica, I become the butt of the joke. I love it.
And then Hillary laughing for a while, it'd be like, good.
Okay. One time I wanted to kill Jessica when she took a video camera out at a convention and literally called me out on camera for having a fake laugh. That was fantastic, Jessica.
Wow.
The video is on the internet. You can find it. And
these
her laugh
moments.
I just keep people from realizing embarrassing truths on their own. I help them find them.
It was an awakening, even though I still do.
I'm a truth sleuth.
Maybe that's your superhero power. Like, if you don't want to fight crime, you can just be a truth sleuth.
There you
go.
Yeah,
I'll just turn into the face of whatever is chasing me and be like, I'm a truth sleuth. Did you know that your shoes are on backwards? And it'll be like, damn, that's embarrassing. I guess I can't eat you now.
Who needs a tomahawk?
I'm really trying to, like, put together what is chasing you in my head. It's like... It's human,
I
think.
It's a bear.
It's a
bear, obviously.
An angry bear.
I think I
saw
a
bear.
I never heard bear.
Only if we're tomahawk throwing is it a zombie.
Okay.
A bear would not be in, like, that just wouldn't make sense.
In this scenario, it seems like it makes sense that I assume that this tomahawk throwing competition takes place near the woods, like Robin Hood style.
Right.
And so the bear just comes out, zombie bear, whatever, you know.
That's an archery competition.
Well, I mean, how different?
Robin Hood did not throw tomahawks. He was an archer.
How different would that be? What are the differences and similarities, you know, just in a couple of sentences, between the archery and the tomahawk throwing competition?
Well, Robin Hood robbed from the rich and gave to the poor. So I assume that there's some kind of subplot where – the Sheriff of Nottingham is trying to catch him. Which, by the way, how many pornos have been made with the Sheriff of Nottingham?
I don't know how many have
thought about this.
That's a good question.
Nottingham? I just like can't even. I don't know. I just feel like that's just a setup for pornography.
That is.
Nottingham, or just like the city Nottingham. How much porn happens in Nottingham, England?
That's true.
Is it fetish porn if it stars British people?
I mean, it has the word ham in it, so it's going to be about a lot of dicks.
I bet Siri would know.
I didn't know that was a euphemism for male genitalia.
Of course.
I did not know that.
Leave it to Ash. He will make everything a euphemism for dicks.
Whatever.
Yeah, you'll just be like, oh, did you know that Hillary's name is also a euphemism for that? And I'll be like, nah, that doesn't surprise me that much.
Hey now.
Wow.
Good.
Poor Hillary.
And it always comes back to me. That's fantastic.
Good.
I was going to make a joke about how Ash's junk looked like a ham sandwich, but I let it out. I let it go.
Well,
you let it out?
Let it out.
Yeah.
I let it out there.
This was a revelation from the key party.
Thank you for sharing about my ham sandwich wiener.
Well,
is it at least
that Matt let it out?
That's like in one of those medical encyclopedias where they have the pictures.
Yeah.
Of like different kinds of rashes, and there's like
the worst
ham sandwich penis.
Ash is in there.
I'm the model.
He is the ham sandwich penis. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
I got paid. It was like $43. Some pictures.
It would be $43, wouldn't it?
Pretty interesting. Pretty interesting to see.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I have to tell a story really quick. So
yeah, absolutely.
I went to France, and did you hear the noise that Hillary just made?
No.
What?
Yeah. So the airport in France, it'll make this dinging sound. It'll be like, ding. Oh, and you'll be like, why is what was that noise? And just every once in a while, for no reason, you know how like sometimes in an airport you'll hear like you know, some kind of like intercom noise, and then someone will make an announcement about something. Mm-hmm. I think it might be related to that, except all of the French people know what that like ding ah means, except for like maybe it's some kind of like code red, like we found a terrorist. I don't know, but
yep.
Next time you go to the French airport, number one, think about the fact that it looks like the Mass Effect like Citadel. Number two, wonder what is that noise?
Yeah, no, it's funny because the Paris Nord train station has the same kind of thing too. It's like the most, it's kind of creepy actually, because everyone's just going about their day and you're like, am I the only one that hears this noise?
Maybe it's
subliminal.
Oh my
God, it's absolutely code.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Think so?
Oh my God, guys, it's like the Manchurian Candidate. Like that noise means something to some like sleeper cell somewhere.
I think it means stupid American.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
They probably just gave free cheese out somewhere.
Oh man.
Or a baguette.
Yeah. Mm. Or both.
Ooh.
Oh my God.
So thank you very much, Jessica Marison, for being with us, because we absolutely knew that we loved having you here.
Absolutely. It's been way too long. It's 90 episodes. We've been wanting to have you since like the beginning. So we're glad you're finally here.
I am so glad to be here. And don't wear spandex if you have low self-esteem.
I can't help myself. It's just sometimes I just have to let it shine.
Oh, no.
Then you don't have self-esteem issues if you have to let anything shine.
I don't think Ash has any problem with self-esteem.
Yeah, no, Ash, like stop like parading around like you're like some kind of like self-esteem case. You're making the rest of us feel bad about ourselves.
Spandex just make me feel wonderful inside.
Oh, that's not the point at all.
He's just a big fan of ham sandwiches.
But Jessica, thanks so much for joining us, and hopefully we have you back on very, very soon, and we'll actually see you in like about a month and a half or something at PAX. So
it's true. We'll have fun. I will not be drunk the whole time. I won't. That would be unprofessional.
Right.
We'll definitely be there, and we'll give you high fives and hang out, and hopefully you get to run around on the floor a little bit this time with us and experience some joy.
Thanks for having me, guys. I will be full of joy for the rest of the evening. I'll go put on some spandex and try to let myself shine.
While watching Nottingham porn.
One of these endings will make it to air.
Someone look it up.
I promise.
I know. How much of this podcast? I just like want to see how many times I can have you guys wrap up the podcast so that the audience is like, God, wait, is this the wrap up? Oh, nope. They're wrapping. Nope. I'm just going to stop.
This is the Lord of the Rings of our podcast.
I love it.
Continually ends.
No, but it's like, yeah, I love it.
Jessica, thank you. Thank you for going all the way to Mordor with me and throwing the ring inside the lava.
Thanks, guys, for having me. I'm going to interrupt again and start another thing.
That was awesome.
No, Hillary, you messed it up. You were just supposed to say good, and then that's the end.
Good.
Okay, we are back with our Naquato for episode 90, which was, what community event or promotion would you love to see from your favorite studio and or publisher? And of course, this was in honor of our guest, Jessica, and the fact that it's also Community Manager Appreciation Day. So we got a lot of awesome responses.
And let me tell you guys, that was a zany interview that we just conducted just moments ago.
It was. She's a lot of fun.
I really hope, because we've been building up how zany it is, I really hope Scott edited it into like a completely normal, like deadpan interview that's just like completely calm and nothing went weird or wrong at all. And then we're like, wait for this crazy interview, guys. And then like nothing happened.
I also hope that future me edits the interview you just listened to be funny and insightful.
First of all, that was an amazing question. My question. So suck it.
I like the question. Time travel questions are always fun.
I don't even understand. What did I do?
She just wants you to suck it, man. Okay. That's when you say, yeah, you say yes, dear.
If that's what you want, you better throw your keys in the bowl.
Putting my mask on now.
All right. God.
This is gross and incestual. Anyway, let us go to some of your responses to our Naquato.
Perfect thing to follow that with.
Yeah.
Good.
And, you know, our first one was from Eric Halston, and he has a different perspective. And this is at Eric Halston on Twitter. He says, interestingly, the more I love a game, the less I want mediated community experiences from pros. I mean, I appreciate and don't envy the troll wrangling that CMs do, but I feel like I myself don't need them, you know? I feel like spontaneously managed a community just feels like a way for corporations to get their fingers into stuff that ideally would be organic. So here's a person that doesn't really necessarily love what community managers do.
So is the suggestion that he would rather like the community form around itself? Is that what I'm understanding?
Well, correctly? I mean, that's how it was in the old days, like during the times of, you know, self-moderated bulletin boards
But there's also a wealth, and I'm not disagreeing with him on a lot of those points, but I think that there's also a lot more stuff now.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And to be fair, I mean, our guest who we just spoke with, Jessica Marizan, actually came from the community. So I feel like, you know, a company like BioWare, for example, who recognizes that you can hire people out of the community who understand the community that are actually fighting against what he's saying about, you know, corporate managing of things. I think, you know, their approach is actually rather organic. So
sure.
I agree with them on some of the things, but I think it's great when a big company who does have to act like a company can recognize the fact that there is something, you know, brilliant in bringing somebody up from the community.
I mean, I don't think he's attacking all communities. No. At the same time, like there are plenty of companies who buy their way into communities, you know, essentially.
Yeah, for sure.
So
there's also the alternative where there is no community, or at least no presence from the company that acknowledges, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the thing with community managers and what a community should be, is that it's great when it organically builds from the ground and there's just people that love to get together and talk about and do things with this thing that they are passionate about. But what's amazing about having a company that sees the wealth in that and then creates a, you know, community manager position and has somebody that's dealing with these people, it makes it kind of awesome, because then you actually get a feedback loop. You know, you actually get the company hearing from their fans and doing things and reacting and talking to. And that's what's amazing about it to me, more than just the community aspect.
I agree.
I agree. I agree too. We're all in agreement. So
yeah,
awesome. You guys, go
Jacques.
Ahead.
Yeah, Jacques Major. Is that how I'm supposed to say?
I believe
Jacques?
So.
Jacques Major.
Jacques Major.
Love it. At Kadiak 1997, fans get to work with the designers at events to make custom quest chains for fan design DLC.
That would be so cool. But you'd be taking be the awesome. Jobs out of the people's hands that went to school for it.
No, but I think it's inspiring. It's not like, here, let me do that for you.
No, I think that's pretty cool. I agree with that. That could be incredible. I think all of us have had great ideas for quest chains and things like that and games that we love and ideas we'd like to implement. And I think if a CM does their job right, I think they're sort of the right way to get your ideas heard. You know, if you have easy access to a community manager, you can tell them.
Like big head mode in a kart racing game based on Mass Effect.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. It's going to happen if we're persistent enough.
We're going to keep saying it. Lisa Chan at El Choco 25 says, any event by anyone in Australia, ideally and unrealistically, in Melbourne, we will provide free Vegemite.
I don't know what Vegemite tastes like. I'm afraid to eat it.
I've never had it.
I want to think it tastes like Nutella, but I don't think it would.
So where is PAX Australia? Is it in Melbourne or is it in Sydney?
Ooh,
somewhere else entirely. Those are the only two Australian cities I could name.
I'm not sure where it is, but I know that it's the same time as Comic-Con.
Yeah.
So San Diego Comic-Con.
There's one in Australia, right?
There PAX, you go.
Yeah.
PAX loves you.
PAX loves you. And you should go to PAX because it's awesome.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Charles
Where
Faraday's...
the gamers go.
What?
What?
Charles Faraday's says, come to Orlando for... at MegaCon, that would rock. What
Poor
is the,
MegaCon.
I haven't been to MegaCon. I don't know if I went last year. What is the community presence
there
like?
2 years ago.
Yeah. What is the community presence there like? Well, there's no gaming there.
Right.
Yeah.
At all. So no studios go. I mean, it used to be really huge because CrossGen Comics was based out of Tampa.
Yeah.
So for when CrossGen was still around, the presence was actually kind of large. Now, unfortunately,
they used to get a big trauma gathering too, didn't they?
Yeah, there was a lot of trauma there too.
Yeah.
MegaCon's interesting. There's sort of like good years and bad years. So I mean, it's the week before PAX.
Yeah.
So,
So like, my favorite answer ever that I've ever seen ever is by Robert Freemering at Mr. Slick. I wish insert big publisher name would fly me to a con to meet the Nerd Appropriate crew.
Oh, we wish they flew you and us to a con so that we could all meet.
For real. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Thanks, Robert.
Love that answer.
Yeah. It's very, very kind of you. I think he just wants his tickle.
Yeah. Now that you've put it out there and he's heard it, he's going to hold you to it.
Well, hopefully, I mean, I know we're going to make a concerted effort to do as many cons as we can in the time coming, you know, maybe not this year, but in the next couple of years. So hopefully soon, right?
Yeah, yes. We'll be there. There's a couple new ones that I want to go to.
Yeah, me too. There's a couple really comic ones that I want to go, like Emerald City Con and stuff like that.
Wait, Ash, did you just say Furry Con?
Wait, what? No, whoa. What are you talking about? I never said that.
I seriously heard you, Furry Con.
Cautiously optimistic.
Alligator Wildly costume excited. Butt flap. Oh, man. All right. All right, so this is one from Chris Jenkins. Are you clapping or fapping?
I don't know.
At Chris Jenkins at Cloglip, he says, more what if alternate history universe DLC a la King Washington, kind of like comic book one shots, but not canon, but fun. Also putting characters with their abilities into other games, a la Super Mario Crossover, Isaac Clarke on the Normandy, etc.
Oh my gosh. Didn't I write an article about Dead Space Mass Effect 3 crossover a long time ago?
And they're doing it now. Did you hear that?
What's that?
They're having.
Oh,
armor.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I think at the time I worked out the years and the dates, and I think one takes place much earlier than the other.
Mm.
And actually, I think it's Dead Space that takes place after Mass Effect, which is counterintuitive, I suppose.
Which is probably why the N7 armor is available in Dead Space.
Maybe.
Because it had already been invented.
Yeah, but I wouldn't be upset if there was like a rig suit that you could unlock in like whatever Mass Effect kart racing.
All
I think
rig
that'd be cool.
Suit.
You know, someone actually said, I don't know, it was a community member and I thought it was a really good idea. They said it'd be really cool to have Isaac's rig in multiplayer as an option.
Oh yes.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Very cool. What about you guys? We haven't given any of our answers yet. So do you guys have one popping in your mind? I'll give mine very quickly.
Of course. You just want to say yours.
I saw none of the profiles blinking, so I figured I'd jump in and try to save you. Mine's kind of my go-to answer, and it deals with voice acting. And butts. Yeah, I want a community where there's a lot of butts, and you can just go, and there's meetups, and you can just touch each other's butts. That's it. That's the whole thing. That's my idea. And crotches, too. Butts and crotches, and you just go and touch them.
I love when the podcast goes super late.
You have to remember that Hillary was just the butt of most of Jessica's jokes, so I think she's
it's the way
balancing it out.
Anyways, Ash,
you guys are fully aware that I'm a big fan of voice acting in games, and I love the idea of table reads, so some of your favorite voice actors doing characters live is one of my favorite things to see. We got to see that at this year's Star Wars Celebration with the Clone Wars cast, and seeing like, you know, the cast of like a Mass Effect 2 or you know, a Borderlands or something doing a table read in character, I think would be incredible. And they of course could then do something like record it and put it on iTunes and sell it to Child's Play Charity, and it would make like lots of money and it would be a good promotion. That's my idea.
There you go.
Good idea.
Man, I don't think I have an idea after yours.
I want Bethesda to give me a dragon.
No, the silence was perfect on that.
What?
Is the dragon a plumpkin?
What's a plumpkin?
Never mind.
I would just like to say,
yeah,
I think the answer that I had was not necessarily something that I would like to see, but I, you know, obviously in addition to what BioWare does, I really like what Harmonix does with their PAX presence as well.
In Boston?
Yeah, I mean, they do like...
Or the stage stuff and like...
Yeah, the stage stuff, and like they do like little game show night every PAX, which I went to last time at Prime, and I thought it was really cool. It was a good time.
Harmonix throws a hell of a party, right? And that's kind of like their whole approach to their events, is they're like, we want people to go and laugh and have a really good time. So even their panels, their like serious panels, are always just like comedy shows.
Oh yeah, and then they did the even at East last year, they did that Rock Band thing at the theater, like offsite, which was cool.
Yeah. Mine is just that mine's more conceptual than like specific, because we've been to plenty of community things and events for games and stuff, and some of them are like kind of gross, you know. Ash, if you remember our first PAX experience, we had multiple ones that were left us going like, okay, I don't know what that was or why we're here right now or anything like that. And I tend to really like the smaller, like close-knit feeling ones. I'm not really big on these, like, you know, girls dancing in the corner while there's like a, you know, DJ playing or something. I don't care about any of that stuff. So like, I like the smaller stuff. I like the stuff that feels a little bit more, you know, like a community as opposed to like crazy party time. So, and not necessarily in the Harmonix way, because I think theirs feel more like a fun party. It's hard to explain unless, I don't know.
Unless you've been there.
You can definitely tell when like large publishers kind of get their hands on an event and it becomes like a giant spectacle, like with a lot of unnecessary things, when I think the main focus should always be people that appreciate the same things getting together and enjoying each other's company, as opposed to like, check out this scantily clad dragon slut dancing in the corner.
That might not be for the community per se. It might be more for promotional purposes.
You guys go to a Witcher 2 party?
Yeah, we did, and it was weird because they had there were ladies, like, pretty much it was just a bar, like any bar or whatever.
Yeah.
And but they had those like stand up game consoles at the back of the bar with the Witcher demo running on them. Cool, right? No problem. But then they had ladies standing next to the machines that were kind of just there to like talk to you while you were playing. And I kind of just wanted to be like, look, it's cool that you're here. Like, I understand, but like, I just kind of want to check out the game and have an hors d'oeuvre and get out of here. You know, like, whatever. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Mm. So they were like verbal prostitutes, essentially.
No, I mean, they were just kind of like,
Jesus. So Justin Banks at Midtown 583 said, I would like to battle the XCOM developers in multiplayer deathmatch in XCOM. Enemy unknown.
Man.
That'd be cool.
He's a brave man.
We played, when we played the demo of Aliens Colonial Marines, I think we were playing against like dev team people, right? Isn't that what happened?
Yeah, and that's why we lost so pathetically.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, that's cool doing stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
It is. Thanks, Justin. We appreciate you.
Hey, Lisa Chan. So I just checked. PAX Australia is in Melbourne.
Boom.
From July 19th to the 21st in the dead of winter. Hooray!
Yay! Mm.
Same week as San Diego Comic-Con.
It is true.
Choose wisely.
She'll probably choose PAX.
Probably. All right. And last, of course, but not least, is our good buddy, Nate Hales, and at NHales80 from P2R Transmission. He says, laser tag recreations of popular scenes from a game let you and maybe a couple of friends relive them in real life and maybe even have some cosplayers along for some really creative immersion. Wow.
Hmm.
I can just see it now. The Witcher 2 sex tent laser tag cosplay experience.
In Nebraska.
And I'm pretty sure, like, a la Fievel's American Tale style, I think Reset Transmission is recording right now somewhere out there.
I would just like to thank Nate Hales for not trying to squeeze two answers into one tweet. And cheat our question of the week like he usually does.
I was going to ask you if you're going to read his entire response this week or just cut him off again.
You read the entire thing.
Oh, man.
Are we going to meet in PAX? Is he going to PAX East?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're all going. Yeah. I'm going to be their first appearance in East.
I'm going to meet him.
I'll meet him.
All right, guys. That about wraps things up for episode 90 of the Rated NA podcast. We have a couple shout-outs this week. First, of course, is to our good buddy, Derek the Pilot, who I just learned has listened to every single episode
of this podcast.
He's been on episodes.
That is crazy. He messaged me the other day, and he's like, when's 89 coming out? Because 89 hadn't come out yet. I'm like, I didn't know you had to listen to all the rest. He's like, yeah, I caught up. And he listened to, I think, like five or six of them back-to-back.
He actually made me release that episode before I was like ready to put it out.
Really?
He is
a nomad on a schedule, you know, like he kind of
is. Yeah.
Stuff
there's a reason why he's called Derek the Pilot.
Yeah.
So
hey,
thanks.
Man, where's the episode?
We appreciate it.
I'd like to thank this next one, Mylan Barrows, for being on the podcast last week, because I literally got on for 15 minutes to pretty much complain about what was happening that weekend to me.
Banner.
And she told me a great story that weirdly we have like very similar ties in life. We realized this the other day, like on Facebook, we did with each other, I think. But she had like the same exact situation, but in reverse, happened to her with her and her husband. And I was like, oh my God. And we were venting. And then my internet died completely right after that. And she took over the reins as episode member number four. So that's really awesome. Thank you so much, Mylan. And
she does a killer job when she's on. So.
She does. She's awesome. It's hilarious. It bummed me out because I was like, oh, it was one I was looking forward to being on. Usually I hate this crap. And I was really looking forward to that one with her. So
she'll be back.
Thank you.
She can't resist my jokes, my amazingly adult humor.
Jokes and jokes.
Spaghetti.
Our other shout out, of course, is to our good friend Amanda, also known as Fluid Fire, for her devotion and her amazing comments to us all the time, and we appreciate
Indeed.
That as well.
Shout outs to both.
Yes, you guys are awesome, and hopefully you guys make it out to East, but if not, we'll see you probably at an upcoming con very soon. And as always, guys, you can find us on the old Facebook. If you go to Facebook and just do a slash
the old Facebook.
Ye Old Facebook. You'll find us on the Facebook and you can comment and do all sorts of stuff there. Best place to probably find us is on Twitter, however, and you can just go to @NerdAppropriate on Twitter. If you send us a message on Twitter, one of us will undoubtedly respond to it. And we like to keep close ties with our community there. So, you know, talk to us and we'll talk back. We do have some stuff open at Google Plus.
We do. And, you said that I was in control. Am I in control of it? Really? We're really bad with this stuff, guys. We need to get
some. No, I don't know.
We have said you were in charge of Goodreads, I think.
Oh. Yeah. Who started the Google Plus?
You said I did.
I thought
oh,
you did.
Boy.
Wow.
We should probably get this.
This is how the sausage gets made, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we got some social networking things that apparently we don't know how to use. And then, of course, there is a Goodreads that I think we're in the process of building. If you want
building.
To.
Actually, I'm making my own Goodreads right now. It's amazing.
Good.
Best book sharing site.
Building it. If you want to go old fashioned, you can always send us something called email. And you can email us at, is that how it goes? No, it goes ash@.
Wow.
Matt@nerdappropriate.com, Hillary1L@nerdappropriate.com, and Scott@nerdappropriate.com. Mail us anything you want. If you want to send us pictures of your cat.
Pictures of
butts. You can do that. Yeah. That's about it for this week. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. And we'll be back next week, episode 91, with super special secret guest that we can't tell you about. We don't know who it is yet.
More shenanigans.
Play us out, Jimmy.
Awesome. All right.
Non sequiturs.
I was waving, but then I realized no one could see that.
Yeah.
To try to be like, if I wave, they'll stop it.
We should
the other thing. Nope. I'm going to interrupt you again and keep going with this. The other thing, anytime you want someone to stop something, just start applauding. I taught Hillary that a long time ago. If you're ever in an awkward situation, watching a bad panel, sitting through a really terrible presentation, just start applauding and then eventually everyone else will too. And then it's over.
That's true. Or if you're on like an awkward conversation with someone, you pull out your iPhone, you are pretty much guaranteed to have them pull out their iPhone too. And I'm talking
it's not clapping. It's not working.
Yay.
It's over now. We're all much better for it.